1340 WAUK Jackson, Milwaukee's real news and great conversation. A Civic Media station.
CBS News Brief. The Hollywood Burbank Airport is without air traffic controllers. California's governor blames the government shutdown. KNX's Pete Demetriou.
Most passengers are hoping either a partial or complete staffing of the control tower will happen in the next 3 to 4 hours.
Illinois and Chicago sue the Trump administration over National Guard deployment. Governor J.B. Pritzker.
I am not afraid, and I won't back down.
A federal judge temporarily blocks the Trump administration from deploying any National Guard units to Oregon. Governor Tina Kotek.
What they are doing and how they are approaching the situation is actually escalating it.
38-year-old ex-NFL quarterback and Fox broadcaster Mark Sanchez is facing a felony battery charge after an alleged fight with a truck driver over an Indianapolis parking space. Marion County, Indiana prosecutor Ryan Mears.
The allegations involve a 38-year-old man becoming involved in an altercation with a 69-year-old man who sustained significant and very severe injuries as a result of that altercation.
CBS News Brief, I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
Fabulous Farm Babe Pam Yonke here. You're listening to 540 WAUK, home of the Midwest Farm Report.
The Brewers and the Cubs tonight. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports from American Family Field, where it's game two of the National League Divisional Playoffs. The Brewers winning game one, 9-3. Jackson Chourio is playing tonight despite a scare with a hamstring injury. Pat Murphy.
The MRI came back and it's inconclusive and it's not a serious hamstring strain.
The Brewers jumped out to a 6-1 lead in the first inning Saturday. Cubs manager Craig Counsell.
Look, the game got away from us early, so it's not like it did, right? It got away from us, so... And it's a loss, and you move on from it quickly. There's no penalty. It's one loss. Doesn't count for more how you lose. We didn't lose well, but we lost, and you move on. That's how the clubhouse felt.
NBA, the Bucks are in Miami for a preseason game against the Heat. Giannis is now with the team after a bout with COVID.
He took a toll on my body. I'm not feeling 100% yet physically. Take it day by day, get back in shape.
That's Giannis Antetokounmpo with Sports on Mike Clemens.
School sports are played by humans, coached by humans, and officiated by humans. So the next time you're sitting in the stands at a school athletic event, please remember this and maintain your humanity, especially when it comes to judging and critiquing athletes, coaches, and officials. Please show your fellow humans some respect. They'll appreciate your empathy.
This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
You're listening to 540 WAUK, Waukesha's home for mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here. Today on the big program, lots to get to, lots to talk about. Shutdown still going on? And welcome to Shutdown MAGA style. Because look, ideology first, power grabs first, praising dear leader while going after and attacking American workers. Going after people's livelihoods, going after their dignity, holding healthcare subsidies hostage, forcing millions of people potentially going to spend more for health insurance, almost 750,000 federal workers, people who are living paycheck to paycheck, who knows, pushing families into financial distress. Yes, this is MAGA government. And understand, you've got unserious people leading our government. You've got Republican leaders who have prioritized political posturing over the lives of everyday Americans. People like Ted Cruz posting images of Democratic senators wearing sombreros or something, claiming the shutdowns over Democrats want to give illegals health care, which is nonsense, which is a lie, but doesn't matter. It fits their bill. It makes the undocumented illegals. And it gives us someone to dehumanize. Someone to look down, someone to blame. Now you got Trump running around, we're going to fire, you know, thousands of people, tens of thousands of federal workers. And what's going on is, well, we're delaying critical things. Food assistance, disaster relief, unemployment benefits, go down the list. And who does that hurt? It hurts the working class, especially the poor working class. Because understand, workers are just pawns in this political game. And as this shutdown goes longer, it's gonna make economic instability worse, and also gonna give Trump more control to lie. Because what they do best, it's what they do good. And this is what's happening. While Trump is sending masked militants to rappel out of Black Hawk helicopters into apartment buildings in Chicago. And the reality is what we're witnessing are people doing horrible things in our name at the behest of terrible people. The videos that have been circulating of amped up alpha males who have been told there are no rules, it's war. On our streets, it's war. In our neighborhoods, and it's war. And people who are like, I'm judge, jury, and executioner. ICE, the FBI, Homeland Security. What they're doing, storming into apartment complexes like armed invaders. What they are disguising assault on our constitutional liberties, on our rights. It's disgusting. They flagrantly violate, well, the Fourth Amendment, at least, ignoring the legal mandate for judicial warrants. Instead of using actual doing their job, they use intimidation, deception, and just plain brute force. Doors get kicked in while families are sleeping, while innocent children are sleeping. They're being terrorized in their own homes, treated like criminals in their own homes without due process. This is, again, outright governmental abuse. These warrantless raids, this coerced consent, these fraudulently presented administrative warrants are flat out unconstitutional. The violence that we're seeing in our name and the lies to shred privacy, trample on liberty, to desecrate the rule of law. Our basic freedoms are under siege by those in these, you want to say rogue agencies, but they're not rogue agencies. They are doing what Dear Leader wants them to do. They're doing what the Trump administration is putting them out there to do. So they've taken some really bad people and given them no rules. And what's interesting is, didn't seem to mean much. Just those people. There must be criminals. If 300 plus FBI, Homeland Security, ICE people went into this apartment building, must have been all bad. Must have all been terrorists or all gang members. Out of a 5-floor apartment building, they arrested 37 people. And you go, well, they got 37 of them. And they go, yeah, you couldn't have done that following our Constitution? Because what about, and again, this is our system. Understand our system. What we were told as kids was the important part of our system, that 1,000 guilty people go free instead of one innocent person go to jail. That the state had to prove beyond a preponderance of the evidence that you had rights and they had to follow the rules because you didn't want jackbooted thugs kicking in windows and doors at 3 o'clock in the morning, zip tying children in the middle. You didn't want that. Yet here we are. And they focus on, oh, we arrested 37. They're terrible people. And maybe they are. But what about the rest of the people that live in those places that are now terrorized in their own homes? And when will it be yours next? When will it be mine? And then how will you react? This is going to cost people their lives. You know, I have red hat friends going, they broke into my house. No, you wouldn't, because they would shoot you dead. And maybe that's what it's going to take. Unfortunately, this is where we are in this country. We have an administration that is completely out of control, and the rule of law means nothing to them. They don't care. They don't care about you. They don't care about me. They don't care about the rules. They care about their power. And this is a massive power grab. This is all about, well, one, covering up the fact that we still can't get the Epstein files. And two, they are literally robbing us blind. They are looting our federal government. And the distraction is all of this chaos. All of it. It's all planned. And the sad reality is I still have people tell me, no, no, you know, Donald Trump, you know, he's got our best interest. Still buying it. What's always been amazing to me is that the biggest defenders of billionaires and criminals are the poor working class people who aspire to potentially one day want to be like them. And yet here we are in this moment. Where when is it going to be you or me? And our silence in this moment is unacceptable. You know, look, I remember in eighth grade history class learning about World War II. And asking the question, well, how could the Germans not know? How could they, you know, hindsight being 2020, how could they not know he was a bad guy? I'm telling you, the guy we got sitting in the White House right now, he's a bad guy. They're doing bad things. And they don't care that you know it. And it's going to get worse. The one thing we cannot do, we cannot cover our eyes. We cannot bury our heads. We have to pay attention. We have to watch what they're doing. And we have to stand up and fight back. That simple. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Right back after this. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1993. That was the day that President Bill Clinton signed into law reforms to the Hatch Act. The Hatch Act was passed in 1939. It limited the political activity of federal employees. The act was passed due to accusations of alleged political cronyism by Democrats on New Deal projects. Half a century later, Congress loosened the restrictions. In his speech before signing the reform, President Clinton explained the changes, saying, quote, "The Federal Employees Political Activities Act, which I am about to sign, will permit federal employees and postal workers on their own time to manage campaigns, raise funds, and hold positions within political parties. Still, there will be some reasonable restrictions. They wouldn't be able to run for partisan political office themselves, for example." President Clinton described the importance of the changes, saying, quote, "We've been supporting democracy throughout the world, but here in our own country, millions of our own citizens have been denied one of the most basic democratic rights, the right to participate in the political process." He ended his remarks by saying, quote, "I look forward to the infusion and federal and postal employee energy, expertise, and dedication into our political system that this bill makes possible. Today, under the regulations of the Act, most employees can assist in voter registration drives, attend fundraisers, contribute money, and distribute campaign literature. They can even run for office in nonpartisan elections. They cannot, however, use their jobs to influence elections or engage in political activity while on the clock. Today, there remains a balancing act between protecting the free speech of federal employees and keeping the government politically neutral." Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So what are we, 6 days into the Trump-led government shutdown? And as I said earlier, what we're seeing in, and you know, what's right in front of us are the priorities that they have. You know, punishing quote-unquote blue states, gutting investments in future technology and infrastructure. But hey, at least at least the construction on Trump's $200 million ballroom is moving full steam ahead, complete with the gold-plated toilets, the glitter-textured wallpaper, the oversized gold-leaf mirrors, lavish chandeliers, faux marble gold columns, and, of course, the plastic furniture coverings. A real throwback to 1970s mob movie. I can't wait for it, but, you know, the thing is this is what's bugging me. It's the chaos. It's the jobs that could and might be lost through all of this. And the priorities that they're showing. And here to share some thoughts on the recent news of these shutdowns, I've asked Brent Booker to come share some thoughts. Brent is the general president of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America. LIUNA.org, the website. Brent, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for having me on again.
So walk me through this. What are we seeing? We're seeing these projects in New York, in Chicago, in Portland, in Democratic-led cities that have already been funded, being stopped. What's going on?
Yeah, that's the disappointing thing. I mean, the shutdown, which we're referring to as a lockout, is one piece of business. The other piece of business is within 24 hours of this, you know, government lockout, they make announcements of $8 billion of DOE projects are going to be canceled. They make an announcement they're going to review and possibly hold up almost $20 billion worth of work in New York City alone. And then a couple of days later, they make an announcement of another couple of billion-dollar project in Chicago. So, you know, within 24 hours of this government lockout, this government shutdown, $30 billion worth of construction projects are being reviewed. They're being canceled. They're put on hold. It's just chaos. And that's not what anybody voted for. Nobody voted to lose their job. Nobody voted to for this chaos or to be locked out of their government job.
Yeah, it does show an interesting first step in this. But what do you say to the person, Brent, who goes, well, look, Trump's just a good businessman. He's got leverage. This is the leverage those Democratic senators make them feel a little pain.
Using people's livelihoods as leverage is not a good businessman. Making people panic, making people worry, the stress of, is my job going to be here next week? Am I going to have a paycheck? That's not good business. It never has been. It never will be. And quite frankly, that's why unions were formed in the first place, is because people were doing that. This is union busting. This is, you know, the recipe to create fear, to create chaos, to create stress, to create, you know, this environment where people aren't sure what's going to happen next. And again, nobody signed up for that. Nobody wants this. Nobody wants to worry about their next paycheck. And that's what's happening right now.
Yeah. Now, we've been reading that these projects are being shut down. They're not being stopped, right? It's just, actually, let me ask you, because I don't know. I'm reading that they're being shut down. I'm reading that they're being defunded. I'm reading that they're being paused. Do we have a sense of what's been stopped? Do we have a sense of if they're going to restart once the government shutdown is settled? Do we know anything yet?
I mean, there's a little nuance in each of them. The $8 billion in DOE was for projects. Some projects were currently underway that they said they're pulling the funding. Some of that was going to fund tens of thousands, if not 100,000, you know, jobs in California alone through this work, through these grants from DOE. The Hudson River Tunnel project, I was on that project about 2 weeks ago, met the laborers, you know, who were actually pouring the concrete, digging the foundation, getting ready for the tunneling to start on the New York side, getting, you know, to receive the tunnel boring machine from the Jersey side. Several hundred people were working. We're still working on that project today, you know, but I worry, as are our members, they're worried that, you know, when this administration says that the project's under review, when they hold the purse strings, what's going to happen in a week? What's going to happen in 2 weeks? Where are we going to be? And where are they going to be? And like I said, I met several hundred laborers, went out there in the job site, thanked them for what they're doing every single day. Rick, all they want to do is go to work. All they want to do is build our country's infrastructure. They don't have time for these games. They don't want to have to worry about their next meal, about their how they're going to make their mortgage. They just want to go out there and apply the skills that they have. And this is not a recipe. This is a recipe for disaster.
Yeah. And look, as someone who's been in and out of New York City, not able to go in and out with a helicopter, that tunnel is desperate. It's been desperately needed for at least a decade, probably two. And any pause, any way of stopping that, slowing it down, is just going to hurt the economy for the Northeast and the citizens of New York. But I guess that's kind of the point, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, that's to create chaos. And it's time and time again, that's been the strategy coming out of this White House, coming out of Washington, D.C. look, we just want Congress to do their job so that we can do our jobs. Our members just want to go to work. They just want to go build that infrastructure. It's going to be an unbelievable project. We've been advocating for 10, like you said, 10, 15 years about the Gateway Tunnel project, about this river crossing, because of what it means to New York City, what it means not only for traffic, what it means moving products up and down the East Coast in a safe and efficient manner. And any delay in that, it's going to hurt the economy. It's going to hurt the GDP. It's going to hurt all that. Most importantly, from my perspective, it's going to hurt people's ability to pay their mortgage, literally. Yeah. It's going to hurt people's ability to get health care insurance, to, you know, get a pension credit, to actually support their community. So it's bigger ramifications from our perspective of the human perspective.
And the thing that bothers me, and the thing that kind of shocks me, actually, is Trump views himself as a builder. This is, you know, he's the guy who builds buildings. One of the things that I would have given him credit for in his first term, had he done it, was an infrastructure bill that, you know, he ran on. He ran on a $3 trillion infrastructure bill. And I'm like, yeah, I'm all in favor of that because, one, it means jobs, but, two, it also means that we start pushing towards the bounds of technological possibility as we have done in past generations. So for me, it's really disappointing because the one thing I might agree with him on, infrastructure, it seems like he's turned his back on.
No, that's exactly right. Look, he garnered a lot of support from our members. A lot of our members voted for him. He is a deal maker. He is a builder. But let's just look at this last month. Revolution Wind, a stop work order from the White House, from the federal government. $18 billion Gateway Tunnel put under review, whether or not we're going to continue building it or not. And that's for the Second Street subway as well as the Hudson River Tunnel crossing. Another $2 billion in Chicago on a subway. Are we going to keep building that or not? And all this work on the $8 billion from the DOE, much of which it's in 16 states, all happen to be blue states, all happen to be states where a majority of that work is performed, by our members. So the one thing from Revolution Wind to DOE to Hudson River Tunneling, Second Avenue Subway, Chicago Subway, the one thing all those projects have in common, they're built by union labor under a project labor agreement. So I'm starting to question and I'm starting to wonder, is this really about leverage, or is this really about punishing, our members, our ability to go to work? Because I don't see, like you mentioned earlier, the ballroom in the White House that's being constructed non-union right now, that's not being put on hold. The $18 billion worth of work in New York City is being put under review, and Revolution Wind and all these others are being built under a project labor agreement. That's the only common theme that I can find across all of these projects that are being put on hold or canceled.
See, that was one of the questions I was going to ask you, the big ballroom. That's being done with non-union labor?
It's being done with non-union laborers, that's for sure.
I think that message, that's one of those messages that should be plastered everywhere so every union member in this country realizes that this guy's not their friend. And because I look at the bigger picture in all this, Brent, and, again, this is supposed to have been the moment the Republicans were reaching out to working class people, especially unions. And you've got the assault on all the federal workers. Nearly a million people have lost collective bargaining rights. You've got now 750,000 people who are affected by this shutdown and the firings and furloughs that are going on. I don't know. The message seems lost on me.
It's pretty loud and clear to me. It is an attack on union families, from stripping collective bargaining rights to federal workers in the first 3 months of almost a million workers to, fast forward 6 months, 7 months. And then we have a lockout or this lockout where they're prevented to go to work or they're furloughed. They're going to have to go to work, but we don't know if they're going to get paid or not. This is just that continuation of chaos. This is that continuation of attack on our members, of other union members, our brothers and sisters in the labor movement. And it's scripted. They showed us what they were going to do, and now they're doing it. And it's, we got to stand up. We got to fight. We got to, band together and figure out how we're going to, stand up and continue these projects that are so important to the country, to our members and their families.
100% with you. So you're part of the group that does that. Organized labor for me is the last line of defense for democracy, for saving what is and has been what we believe in this country. What's the plan?
Look, we're in those conversations every day. I'm in conversations every day with my brothers and sisters in the labor movement, with leadership, and most importantly, with rank and file members. And step one of this plan is to communicate to our members exactly what's going on. Make sure that they're aware of what's happening. And all of our polling, all of our focus groups, more importantly, every job site I've been on, which has been a lot over the last year, talking to our members, hearing from them, what's important to them, what do they want, and then educating them and re-educating them and talking to them and telling them this is what's at stake. And we've learned in all of these exercises, it becomes really important to them when it's very personal to them. And we've got to find a way to communicate that, whether it's through social media, through digital strategies, through, you know, op-eds, TV, you name it, for us to get out there, talk to our members, make sure that they're aware of. We're getting ready to embark upon a very large digital campaign at the Labor's, just so that members know who their union is, what their union's all about, what their union's doing to fight for them. Not telling them who to vote for, not telling them what to, how to get engaged in politics, but just talking to them and the general public about how important the union movement is. We got to build this momentum from the ground up so that when we have a mass of people, a consensus from just in our organization to then spread that to the other organizations to stand up and do what the labor movement's always done and stand up and fight for our rights.
Yeah, we've all heard the phrase, you know, never let a good crisis go to waste. What we're witnessing is a crisis right in front of us. So it's my hope that the messaging out of this is aimed in that direction. Because for me, this shutdown, at least the way I'm seeing it, and maybe you're going to have a different opinion on it, but my view is, you know, Democrats have taken the position that healthcare is important. We don't want to lose what little healthcare we get for people across the economic spectrum. And trust, those two things are big issues. Some are saying that it's not worth shutting government down over, but Democrats don't control government. They do have a little bit of say in saying, hey, we want to make sure that what little social safety net we have under people's health doesn't go away. So I'm curious what messaging you see coming out of that.
Look, this is a Republican shutdown. Let's be honest. They control the White House, the Senate, and the House. And we've all been, you've been involved with, I've been involved with negotiations for the last 25 years. And with a negotiation, you have to have two willing parties ready, willing, and able to sit down at the table and actually negotiate and talk. That's not what happened here in this line. That's why I'm calling it a lockout. Imagine going into a collective bargaining session. The employers don't show up for the first five sessions. On the sixth session, they come in and say, you're not getting anything. That's effectively what's happened here in the last 6 weeks, you know, in Washington, D.C., that there was no willingness to even sit down and engage in conversation. That, you know, the Democrats finally, you know, they go in and the Republicans finally agree to meet with them 72 hours before and say, no, 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 and good luck. And now it's a game of everybody's looking at their polling to see which one is getting, you know, blamed for this. I don't blame the Democrats for this. Standing up to make sure that people have health care, that's not a bad, you know, principled stance to stand on. Standing up to make sure, you know, that these jobs don't get canceled is not a bad stance to be on. And the Republicans saying, oh, just sign it and we'll get to it later. That's what we did last time. And it didn't work out. Yeah. So taking a principled stance when you are the minority and looking at this through the lens of negotiations that you and I and everyone in the labor movement is familiar with, none of us would be happy with how these negotiations took place. And, you know, at some point you got to stand up and say enough's enough. And I think that's what they've done here.
Yeah, trust me doesn't go very far when you've got a track record of not being trustworthy. Because I've asked the question before, you know, which is more worthless, Donald Trump's word or his signature? Because he seems to break both for working people an awful lot. So, you know, let me ask you a last line of questioning, you know, going forward, because I don't know that there's any reopening near. What do you see this meaning for working people? And eventually, what's it going to take for us to do what you said a moment ago, come back together and then demand that those, our representatives, our tools in Congress, actually work the way we want them to?
Look, every day that this lockout continues is a bad day for American working families. And you know, I want this to end. I didn't want it to begin with. And certainly wanted to end as soon as possible. You know, talking about healthcare, yeah, all of our, if they're working, they have healthcare. So it's easy to say healthcare doesn't matter for us, right? But when you look at how healthcare is structured, as more and more people that lose their healthcare are going to continue to get services, it just means that our premiums are going to increase. It means that our health and welfare contributions are going to increase. So when we do sit down at a negotiating table, we're going to have less money in our wages because more money has to go to healthcare. So this does have an impact on us. And we need to have Congress. Like I said earlier, Congress has to get back into D.C. to do their job so that our members can continue to build our nation's infrastructure, our energy infrastructure, and build this country. And we shouldn't be playing games with people's paychecks. And we're in the hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of American workers who are unsure of their paycheck because of the chaos coming from this White House, coming from Washington, D.C.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how this week works out. I hope this is a short shutdown. I hope people are lockout, and I love your frame. I hope this is a short lockout. I hope, as I always do, people get back to work, and we do the work of the American people. Brent, I appreciate you taking time. Keep up the great work, and I look forward to talking to you again real soon.
Sounds good, Rick. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks so much, our good friend Brent Booker. Check out their website at Liuna, at liuna.org. Want to hear your thoughts. When does this end, and how do we push and make sure that they're doing what we want them to do? Email me, Rick at thericksmithshow.com. Right back. Stick around.
A voice for real news and great conversation in Milwaukee. 540 WAUK.
Start your day with me, Pam Yonke, every morning with the Midwest Farm Report, right here on 540 WAUK.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mostly cloudy for tonight, some showers and a few thunderstorms around, and a low in the mid-50s. For tomorrow, maybe an early lingering shower, then a clearing sky with sunshine for the afternoon and cooler with highs in the mid-60s. And highs in the low 60s with sun for Wednesday. Right now it's 58.
Ahoo, this is Robert Pilot of Native Roots Radio. On our show, we share stories from Turtle Island highlighting the people and issues shaping our communities. From protecting water to treaty rights and preserving languages and traditions, we cover it all. Hear voices like Arvina Martin of Emerge Wisconsin, Dr. Stately, Robert Lilligren, and more. Because Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues.
Native Roots Radio, weeknights at 8 on your local Civic Media radio station.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, not a lot going on, huh? Boring weekend. Nothing happening. You know, just that little, as we talked about, that little defunding, a whole bunch of stuff, shutting down construction projects, stalling, delaying construction projects, investments in the future. I guess we're bombing Portland now. I guess you're locking up children in apartment buildings. A whole bunch of nothing. It's all or nothing. Oh, and on top of all that, government shutdown. What fun and entertainment. And yeah, it's the focus of the emails that I got from folks. Did you see Nicole Wallace swear on TV? And the answer is, I saw her drop the F-bomb. She was quoting someone. The F-bomb, the children, was the quote. Supposedly from an ICE agent. I think that's kind of news. And here to share some thoughts on the fact, is this news? One of my go-to news people. My good friend Sarah Burris, she's a reporter over at Raw Story, rawstory.com, the website. If you want to take a look at her work. Sarah, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, Rick, how are you?
So blank the children. Again, love the children. Blank the children.
Yeah. So apparently this is what an ICE agent said to a woman who was a neighbor who lived next door to the apartment complex where they dropped like 300 federal agents. They had like helicopters that they rappelled down from. Like, this was a movie. This was basically, and they had staff with cameras to film the whole thing because they wanted to create some sort of sensationalized war film out of this whole ordeal. And this was an apartment building that got raided by federal agents. It was like a five-story building, and a ton of people were actual citizens. They were zip-tying children. They set off flashbangs. I mean, it was pretty absurd. And you know, as one of the neighbors was complaining about them zip tying children and making them sit on the sidewalk sobbing until 3 o'clock in the morning, the neighbor overheard the ICE agent, you know, say F the children. And they bleeped it on MSNBC and Nicole Wallace said it. And I'll, you know, the thing about Nicole that I love is that every time she, because she will swear, like she'll go there. And every time she does, it becomes news in a way that highlights the issue that she's talking about. Even though it was like this whole thing happened on like what, Tuesday night, Tuesday yeah. early in the morning the first, at 1 yeah. o'clock in the morning. She talked about it, I want to say on Friday. And so she's resurrecting this story in a way where, because of the way that she's reporting it, it's drawing attention to something again. And the story exploded again because of that. Thank God, because I feel like a lot of people were kind of ignoring this. There were videos, this whole thing is really absurd, and it just sort of faded away, you know, after a couple of days. And it seems like this should be a more significant story than it was.
Yeah. No, I mean, we spent most of the time talking about the government shutdown and all the stuff that was going on
yeah.
with that. And, you know, there's part of me that goes, maybe the shutdown was cover to be able to do all this horrible stuff. Or I'm not actually sure which is covering which. Because it's all bad. There's nothing good coming out of DC or out of the news, and that's by design. This is the mastery that is our dear leader.
It is, and you know, I mean, the thing that's really frustrating to me is there are a lot of conversations that are happening online from the left where folks are saying, you know, maybe it's not such a bad thing to have the government shut down for 3 years while Donald Trump is in office. And so my reaction, obviously, the first thing I think is no, like that's a bad idea. Like we love our government. The government takes care of a lot of people. And that debate has kind of evolved over the weekend, definitely. And I keep seeing all of the arguments for it. And so I think initially I was like, no. And now I'm sort of listening to these arguments saying, oh, this is, I mean, they're making a good case for something
no,
like that.
Look, my point all along has been, and I have friends going, isn't this bad and this horrible? I'm like, no, it's not bad enough yet. We need to see more images of children zip-tied. We need to see more images of soldiers coming out of Black Hawk helicopters, going in through the windows of apartments, because evidently we don't believe what we're being told. So we need to see these images. They need to overreach in such a way that it appalls us. It shakes us awake to be appalled from all of the chaos that's around us. And this is what I've been saying since Election Day. You know, the phrase that I've been using is the solutions to our future will come from the suffering due to their savagery. Well, we are witnessing their savagery. And I don't know they've gone far enough yet. I think they're going to, but I don't know they're far enough yet.
That's really terrifying. One of the things that I think back to is whenever Trump took over in 2017 and, you know, the Stephen Miller child separation thing where they basically were putting kids in cages. That was a huge story for like a week. And then any other story after that point where you talked about kids in cages, nobody really cared. And I'm like, how does this happen? Like, how does that get normalized in our society that it's okay to put kids in cages? So this idea now that we're going to put, you know, we're throwing American citizens in jail, we're zip tying children and making them sit on the sidewalk for children
yeah.
Who were citizens that they took into custody. They don't know where they are. Like they've lost these four kids now. This whole ordeal, this whole story is so terrifying. And it's frustrating that not, you know, there's not enough conversation about it.
No, I mean, I think the reality is it's not my kids. You know, I think that's where we go. I think we've become so insulated from everyone else where, oh, it's not my problem. It's not me. It's those people. And look, we've been trained to demonize those people because the first reaction I got from my Red Hat Brigade was, well, they're all whatever Venezuelan gang is supposed, the whole apartment complex is nothing but Venezuelan gang members. And I'm going, you know, if they are there, I say we go get them. Yes. but we don't throw due process out the window. We definitely don't throw the Constitution out the window, because people still have the right to be secure in their persons and papers without a warrant. And this is where my problem is I don't know that you got a warrant for every apartment in that building, yet from what I'm being told, they kicked in just about every door.
Every single person, every door, they kicked in. And at one point, one of the guys who's a citizen who was zip-tied sitting on the sidewalk specifically asked, do you have a warrant and can I speak to a lawyer? And neither of those things were granted to him. He was eventually let go, but that was one of the things that the ACLU of Illinois was really harping on. Like, they were denied not only due process, we still don't even know if there was any kind of warrant here. It seems like the ICE agents that we're seeing constantly on TV, it's a woman who screamed out the window asking for directions somewhere, and ICE grabbed her. They're now calling it the Kavanaugh stop. Have you heard about this? The Kavanaugh stop is because Brett Kavanaugh wrote this judicial opinion that said that the only people that were being taken by ICE and by federal agents were undocumented immigrants. And so now everybody's talking about how all of these Americans that are getting nabbed and thrown in ICE custody for days or weeks at a time. And it's the Kavanaugh stop. And that has that the fact that that has gone beyond nerd culture, you know, the politics culture, to that people are actually saying it. I mean, that's his legacy now.
No,
right?
No, absolutely. Like, but, you know, 300, what, ICE, Homeland Security. Who else? What other ABC, FBI, what
FBI,
other
FBI, AFT, DEA. ICE and Homeland Security.
So since Homeland Security is there, this goes under national security. So I would assume their argument would be, don't need a warrant.
Right. Like that's going to be kind of that seems to be their thing. Right. If you look what's happening in Portland right now, over the weekend, there was this judicial opinion that came down from the Oregon court from a Trump judge that was a thing of beauty. I mean, for nerds like me who love to read a lot of this stuff, it's one thing. But the way that this judge wrote this opinion, every single thing that Trump has said, she quoted back to them to legitimize her argument. And so it's now they're basically saying, okay, we're not going to deploy the Oregon National Guard. We have already deployed the California Guard. So we're going to send the California Guard into Oregon because we could do that legally. And so
how?
Exactly. Like, how is it that you are allowed to deploy the California Guard to another state without consulting the governor of the state?
Yeah,
I mean, this is where we are now.
And the thing is who's going to stop them? You know, at this point, you know, who's going to stop with the government shut down? And they're using this as the opportunity to go after and exact revenge on Trump's enemies, because the people that he hates. So this is where, again, I come back to my point. You know, the reality is dear leader is going to overreach at some point. And everybody at some point has to wake up, or we're going to be a fascist nation.
I mean, I think we're getting alarmingly close to it. One of the jokes I saw over the weekend, though, was somebody saying maybe he's just sitting in the White House being like, God, I keep trying to get them to throw me out, but it doesn't matter what I do. Like, people are letting me do it.
Well, let me ask you this, because, you know, I had this conversation yesterday with a friend. This isn't Trump's doing. I believe he's not that smart, because if you look at his first administration, it was really chaotic. There wasn't really a direction. This is the think tank world who for decades now have been dreaming up bad ideas in their ivory towers, because our billionaires pay them a lot of money to dream up really bad ideas. And this is kind of like their Super Bowl. Project 2025 was their Bible, if you will. So they're just doing what they've been wargaming for years and going as far as they possibly can go. I don't think this is Trump's doing Hardly at all. I think he's saying, yeah, go ahead, do more. But I don't know that these are his ideas.
Well, one of the things that we heard, I think it was sometime last week, Trump did an interview, or he did a conversation with maybe it was the mayor of Portland, where he was like, I mean, I'm seeing all of these videos of, you know, fires being set in Portland. Like, is that not real? And the mayor of Portland was like, I mean, I don't know what you're watching, but that's not happening. And then he's repeating things to her saying, you know, my people are telling me this and they're telling me this. And so you have to know, like, this is the Stephen Millers of the world. This is the Heritage Foundation people who are saying whatever it takes to get him to do
what they want him to do,
what they want.
Absolutely.
And it is. And then the Supreme Court allows it. And so it's frustrating to watch, because you just sort of see this circle of Trump does something crazy. Trump justifies it by saying something crazy that's not even true. And then the Supreme Court legitimizes it. I mean, this just keeps happening over and over and over again, like a nightmare every night.
But the Portland thing, I know people who live in Portland and they're like, I'm not seeing what he's saying. What are, did they run out of coffee? Did they run out of, you know, knapsacks, or did they run?
There's a flannel shortage and it's almost winter.
Okay. But you know, the one person told me there's the people walking around in chicken suits, and you've got them, you know, basically hitting them with flash grenades and with tear gas. And you go, whatever happened to being allowed to seek redress of grievance to your government? What happened to that free speech thing that the right, you know, is trying to canonize Charlie Kirk over, while simultaneously trying to crush anyone's speech that they don't agree with? What happened?
One of the things that I saw last week in Illinois was a veteran who was yelling at ICE officials during a protest, an anti-ICE protest. And he was yelling at them, and they knocked him to the ground and then surrounded him and grabbed him and handcuffed him and took him off. And I mean, this guy was an Air Force Vietnam veteran.
Yeah. And did you see the alderman that they grabbed?
Yeah.
Same thing.
It's the exact same thing. It's people who are just saying something. We're just saying, you know, like, F you or screw you, or
it's not even that. It's, you know, it's the hey, do you have a warrant?
Who asked for directions.
Hey, do you have a warrant?
Yeah, do you have a warrant? Can I speak to my lawyer? Can I have directions somewhere? And it's like, oh no, you're brown. So
yeah, no, this is sadly where we are. So the question becomes: is how much further? How much worse does this get? Do you think? Because again, we're a divided nation. You know, I've had my red hat friends going, you know, they went and they got 37 of those criminals off the street, and you'd want them to be walking free. And I'm going, but at what cost?
Yeah.
You know, how many people, I don't know how many people are in that apartment building, but I got to think there are a whole lot more than 37. If you went through more than 300 ICE, FBI, National Security, ATF, you had more than 300 people, some of them jumping out of Black Hawk helicopters, going through windows. I got to think it was for more than just 37 people.
One would assume, and four children that are missing that we don't know where they are. Four American citizen children who were just MIA because the government is the government now. I think it gets a lot worse, because I think they're going to keep targeting blue cities and blue states. And until it happens in like Memphis or Shreveport or, you know, some area of the country that actually has Republicans in it, I think, you know, I think nobody cares.
Now, I said this, you know, about a month and a half ago, I said, nobody's going to care until it's a white girl.
Yeah.
And I hate to sound that crass or that sexist or that racist, but that's the only thing that's going to matter. Because we don't seem to mind seeing brown people being zip tied and held for hours on end for doing nothing more than sleeping in their beds.
Yeah. Yeah. And I will say, too, I saw a statistic on Friday that that I loved. It's Oklahoma City has 46% has a 46% higher crime rate than Portland does.
Yeah. It's crazy. I got to get a couple other things real quick. What's going on over with Fox News host turned Trump mini schnauzer Jeanine Pirro? What's going on there? What's the story with her? And what's the story with this January 6th hero? You know, the New York police hero, this Thomas Webster. What's going on here?
Okay, so this is a weird story. Jeanine Pirro has, since day one, tried to get a ton of people indicted before a grand jury in Washington, D.C. And the grand jury is not buying it. So it's frequently happening that Jeanine Pirro is having to dismiss cases, which is driving the D.C. judges crazy, which seems like a really nerdy thing, right, to be upset about. They had a January 6th guy. He was a New York City police officer who came down to Washington, who participated in January 6th, who beat the heck out of a bunch of cops, who like shoved the bike rack into, you know, the crowd of cops. He was arrested and basically put in jail for 10 years. And then Donald Trump obviously pardoned him. Now he's demanding that that DC judges, it's like I can't remember the Latin term for it, but it's a process by which they ask the court to admit they were wrong. And Jeanine Pirro, of all people, was like, no. And I don't, it's one of those things where I'm reading through this this response from the DC districts to Thomas Webster's appeal demanding, you know, that all of the court admit all of this was wrong. And it is just, you know, going through line by line of everything that he did and why it was so awful and that he should know better because he's a police officer. And I'm just like, there's no way she read this. There is just no way. I mean, her name was on it, but there were other, you know, assistant U.S. attorneys on there as well who signed off. And I'm like, No way.
She's getting on the other side of that. But you know, in order to get a pardon, don't you have to at least say, yeah, I'm sorry for what I did, and accept responsibility before that? I mean, it's the reason that Trump was never going to get a pardon, because he was never going to admit he did anything wrong. Am I right?
Yeah. So that ended up being adjudicated by Joe Arpaio, Sheriff Joe Arpaio, in Arizona, in Phoenix, the notorious sheriff who was convicted of a felony and who was pardoned by Donald Trump, spent years litigating, demanding that he not have to admit that he was wrong to accept the pardon. And finally, I mean, the appeals court, like over and over, the court just said no, every time. Got to the appeals court, and then he appealed to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court was like, we don't want to hear it.
Yeah, we don't want to hear it. No. Good. Finally, what's going on with the Trump coin? There's supposed to be a Trump dollar coin. What's going on? I was looking forward to my Charlie Kirk silver coin and my Donald Trump gold coin. Am I getting my coins? That's what I want to know.
So apparently the Treasury Department has decided that they're going to mint dollar Donald Trump coins. The law, there is an 1866 law that says that to have a coin, to have you on any kind of currency, you have to be dead. So that has been the question for everyone. Like, okay, how are you either going to sidestep this, or how are you going to figure out a way to mint these beyond just handing them out to people? Right. Like, the thing is the president can have all of these like challenge coins and other stuff made all the time with his picture on it to hand out to people, but he wants it apparently on currency.
He wants currency. And look, dear leader gets what dear leader wants. So if Donald Trump says, I said so, that's enough, right? At least that's what I think, right?
No, I don't think it's going to work that way. But the thing I'm curious about is, are the folks who are there in the mint right now, like, are they actually working? Are they doing stuff, or are they out because of the shutdown?
Well, we'll find out. Sarah, as always, great stuff. I appreciate you taking time for us. Thanks so much.
Thanks. Have a good week, everyone.
You as well, our good friend Sarah Burris. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. Do you want your Trump coin? Be a sign of national pride to have a Trump coin, have his mug with the little thing over. What do you think? Email me, Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. Right back. Stick around.
We are AFGE. We support our nation's military and our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders and provide services to our nation's seniors across the country and here in Washington, D.C., the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
So, shock of all shocks, under the heading of Never Let a Good Crisis, a self-created crisis, go to waste. The Trump administration is moving on a plan to make it harder for older working-class Americans to qualify for Social Security disability by eliminating the age part of the factoring into, you know, whether you're eligible. So age no longer going to play part of this. And under the proposed changes, people in their 50s and 60s, they're going to face a much higher bar to demonstrate that they can't work, potentially disqualifying hundreds of thousands of people from disability eligibility. And this is one of those things, is someone who's actually done physical manual labor my entire working life, this is a big deal, because I've seen people who, look, bad luck, bad genes, bad whatever, are broken. And in the interests of commerce, in the interest of making the wealth class more money, they basically work themselves out of a job. And look, you know, I've been loading trucks and driving trucks for 35 plus years now. Knees are shot, hips are shot. You're not going to work till 70. And I already know that, which is why they want to keep raising the retirement age. So for working class people, this is kind of a big deal. And it's part of a much bigger, much broader federal initiative to tighten the rules, reduce government assistance, especially for low-income elderly and disabled people. This is a way to make sure that they can pay for the tax cuts that they gave their billionaire friends by stealing from the most vulnerable and the least among us. But this is their MO, isn't it? This is what they do. So should we be surprised? Should we be shocked? And the answer is no. They've told us time and time again who they are. They've shown us time and time again who they are. And here they are again, showing again. And this is where I go back to, you know, where I was talking with Sarah. The sad reality is it's going to have to get much worse before it gets any better. And, you know, this policy, you've got, you know, pundits and critics who have said, look, this is going after old people. This is going after vulnerable workers who are going to struggle much more than their younger counterparts to find a new job due to their health. And of course, you know, all of the other things that go into this. And, you know, you think there's no age discrimination going on. Good luck in the work world where people actually have to work. Physical labor. This is a killer. And the reality is if this does go through, if they are able to get away with this, if they are able to ram this down our throats, what's going to happen is many older Americans are going to have to take early retirement, which means lesser benefits, higher poverty. And I got to tell you, I think that's the plan. I think the plan is to make people desperate again, especially the old elderly. Because you think about Social Security, man. Again, our Republican friends of past era, they were against it. It's going to make people dependent, lazy. They want that disposable workforce again. They want those people pliable and desperate. And what Social Security did amazingly, honestly and truthfully, did amazingly well, lower the poverty rate. You know, poverty was what, 80% for seniors 100 years ago? 90%? What, under 10 now? They want to take us back to the good old days. And they weren't so good, especially for older people. Want to hear your thoughts? Something you're on board with? Should we screw the old people? I need my tax cuts now if I'm a billionaire. Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Miss any portion of the program, grab the podcast. And as always, thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. Rick@therickSmithShow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
This is 540 WAUK Jackson, Milwaukee's real news and great conversation. A Civic Media station.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Progressive Insurance.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper. Considerable delays for those flying into or out of the Hollywood Burbank Airport without air traffic controllers. California Governor Gavin Newsom on social media blames the government shutdown. KNX's Pete Demetriou.
My flight's delayed like 4 hours now.
You're wondering whether you're going to be able to take off at all.
I think so. This is probably not going to happen then.
People like Ron are hoping staffing of the control tower will happen. Otherwise, they're going to have to book a hotel or, if possible, rent cars and drive. Pete Demetriou for CBS News, Burbank, California.
President Trump is getting ready to get tough in deploying federal troops to cities.
The Insurrection Act allows a president to deploy.